Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, what is your favorite school supply?
My favorite school supply has to be mechanical pencils.
Really?
I loved mechanical pencils so much as a kid. I bought really fancy ones, and I would buy, like, replacement lead to put in them.
Uh-huh.
And I got, like, into, like, the actual sizes of the replacement LEDs and getting the right ones, and it was a whole thing.
Okay.
I was a real mechanical pencil connoisseur.
You know, I was surprised by that, but the more you talk about it, the more I'm like, yep, that's Matt Wilson.
Well, we were just talking about your love of your new notebook, your new binder.
You said notebook, you said binder. It's a hybrid note binder. Which means it's a binder.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a binder, but it's a fancy binder from Five Star, guaranteed to last me the entire school year. I'm 36 years old. I have not been to school in at least 14 years.
But you're doing it. You're living the dream. You're living the school supply dream.
It's, look, I'm an adult, and that means I can go to Target and I can pick out a notebook that I like, and I get the same discounts as everybody else, baby. I work that system. Watch out for my review of the Mead 5-star first gear hybrid note binder on my new YouTube channel, Noteboys.
Hashtag Noteboys.
Hashtag Noteboys. Make sure you smash that like and subscribe. But that's not what we do here on this show, even though we've been doing it for the past 2 minutes. Matt, what do we do on this show?
Wait, we don't just review school supplies now?
Do you want to change format right now? I'll cancel our guest. And we can do that for the next 400 episodes. I'm not kidding.
I got to go back and change my show plans. Usually what we do on this show, Chris, is we talk to people in the world of comic books and the things that are in the orbit of comic books. Mm-hmm. Those could be tabletop games or pro wrestling or books about comic book conventions. We talked to somebody about that last week. And this week, we have somebody in that category, I think. We're welcoming John Sung to the show.
That's right. And he's been involved in the world of comics for a while. But the project he's going to be talking to us about tonight is something that is near and dear to my heart. It is called Tales of Ten Forward. It's about people drinking heavily and then attempting to recap episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. There's a crowdfunding campaign for it going right now. I'm excited. There are a bunch that exist, including one with someone who's very much in comics, Ryan North, that everyone should check out. But we're going to be talking to John about that in a little bit.
Yes, we got a lot of questions about Cynthia Hall for him.
You did it, Matt. You pulled out Cynthia Hall.
But before we get to that, Chris, we've got, as we always do, some business to take care of, starting with thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. Now, in ages past, when you were a lad with your mechanical pencil, mm-hmm. and when I had my fresh notebooks, we would have, if we wanted to support a podcast that we loved, we would have to go to an ATM,
right?
Punch in the PIN number, which we did not have. It was our parents' PIN number.
We would have to steal from our parents.
We'd have to steal from our parents, and we would have to hastily and quietly mail that cash money or check or money order down to 415 Gimmick Street. But you don't have to do that anymore. You
don't.
You can just go to patreon.com/warrocketajax, kick in as little as a dollar a month to help me buy some notebooks, help Matt get some mechanical pencils, and help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. Matt, who do we have to thank this week?
Oh, we've got some lovely names this week.
Should I write them in my notebook?
Write them in a wonderful script.
I also bought pens.
We're starting with Diego Acevedo.
Thank you, Diego.
Next, we have Team Rocket Bits.
Thank you, Team Rocket Bits. Also, recently back to Sailor Business, so thank you very much.
A wonderful team. And Andrew McCallum.
Thank you, Andrew.
Those are our newest Patreon supporters. If you would like to follow in their footsteps, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and toss us whatever you can afford, be it as little as $1 a month, to get stuff like ad-free episodes of everything that we do, bonus audio that only Patreon supporters get, cool physical rewards, line-stepping privileges for our segments where we rank stuff, and much more. So if any of that sounds cool to you, head on over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and help us out if you can. With that, Chris, it's time for some checks and wrecks.
Let's do it.
Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
Well, Matt, as you know, last weekend I did celebrate my 36th birthday. We are now in the post-birthday period, which means it is officially Halloween. Everybody, happy Halloween, Matt.
It's almost Halloween.
It's almost Halloween. And as we know, Halloween ends on October 31st. Christmas begins on November 1st. But I celebrated my birthday by doing something I'd never done before. Aiden and I took a drive down to Saxbahal, which is a very small town here in North Carolina, not too far away from where I live. It's, I believe it has like 1,100 people. No kidding. But they are doing a big kind of small town touristy revitalization. Like they have big farmers market stuff with live music every Saturday. We went down on a Sunday. That was my birthday. And we went kayaking on the Haw River. And I had never been kayaking before. But a lot of my friends had recently gone kayaking. Chris Rowling had recently been kayaking. Allie Stock, who's my co-host on Xenowarrior Biz, she told me today that she had recently been kayaking. And we wanted to give it a try. And Matt, I kind of loved it. It was really fun. We each got our own kayaks, Aiden and I, because when I called and they asked if I would like it, two single kayaks or a tandem, I was like, well, it's our first time doing this ever. What do you recommend? And the gentleman on the other end of the phone referred to the tandem kayaks as divorce boats.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So we got two individual kayaks. But we had a really good time. We were out on the river for about 2.5 hours. It was a fun workout for me because you could kind of, you know, really push hard on the paddling and then just stop and drift and sit there. They also do, at this particular kayak company, full moon and stargazing guided tours where you row out onto the lake and at night and look up at the stars. And that sounds delightful. So I absolutely want to try it again. But yeah, it was fun to kind of get out and go somewhere nearby, near where I live, near home, where I'd never been before, and see something cool. We had dinner in a restaurant in a remodeled textile mill where the Mountain Goats are going to be playing in a couple months. So it was really, really fun, and I enjoyed it. I had a happy birthday. Also, Kel McDonald got me a birthday present. She got me the first volume of Dragon Ball. So, Matt, 36 might be the year. I've been threatening it for about 8 years now. This might be the year I get into Dragon Ball.
All right. We can finally do some panel president or every story ever lists if you do that.
Can't wait for Goku to crush Spider-Man at the top. Krillin, Frieza. Oh,
what who's other the one characters that, can you name?
Who's the one that sucks? Yamcha? Is that Yamcha?
Yeah, Yamcha sucks.
Yeah. Trunks, Piccolo. Yeah.
Regular Dragon Ball, though, where Goku's a kid, none of those are in it, except Piccolo.
Okay. Master Roshi?
He's in there.
Wait, is Krillin not in it? I thought Krillin was like his boy from Small Times.
I think he does meet Krillin in the original Dragon Ball. I don't honestly know much about the original Dragon Ball. So
neither do I, but it's time to find out, Matt.
Yes, it is time to find out. You're reaching the limit of my knowledge about it, actually.
All right. Well, we're past the limits of my knowledge. Did I say Frieza already? Bulma?
I believe Bulma is there, yes.
Yeah. Oh, what's Vegeta's wife's name?
That is Bulma.
Wait, well, who's Goku's wife?
Chi-Chi.
Chi-Chi. Okay, yeah, we're past it. Matt, what are you up to this week?
Whew. Oh, boy. I feel like I was being tested. I ring the alarm for wrestling content because I'm about to give you some.
That's the alarm, everybody.
So I was going to talk about this on Smark of the Beast 2, but we're taking a little break on Smark of the Beast for because of unforeseen circumstances. So I just wanted to talk about my trip to go see SmackDown Live in person. It's weird to say you went to go see SmackDown Live because that's the title of the show. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to see it live, you have to go. You have to say a different word from live because live is in the name.
Yeah, there's really no other way to say that because you can't be like, oh, I went to see SmackDown Live at an arena because they do house shows as that brand too. And it's not a taping anymore because it airs live.
It's very confusing. Anyway, I was in attendance at SmackDown in Greenville, South Carolina this week. Marlene and I were. And it was a fun time. We saw some good matches. We saw a really good New Day versus Sanity match. Good opening segment with Charlotte, Carmella, and Becky Lynch. And then they had a good tag match with Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose. So some good stuff in the show. There was also an opening tag match that was, what I saw of it was dope because it was between the Usos and the Bar. But I missed a little bit of that because turns out the Bon Secours Wellness Arena in Greenville now has a clear bag policy.
Okay.
Where you can't walk in with a bag. And we didn't know that walking in. And they made Marlene put her stuff in a clear plastic bag. And I had to run back to the car and put her purse in the car. So that made us miss a little bit of that opening dark match. We saw a little bit of 205 Live after the show, but left during that, partially because, Chris, even though the show was fun, I got to say, I've seen several live shows, different types of live shows, including other WWE shows, at the Bon Secours Wellness Arena in Greenville. But this was the first one where, like, the people around us just made us say, like, okay, let's go. We were getting all types. The guy behind us was just like Mr. Supercritic.
Oh, boy.
Like, he was talking about how if Mandy Rose had been a veteran wrestler, she would have poked Charlotte in the eyes when she was selling her eyes being hurt instead of, like, kicking her. And I just wanted to turn around and be like, brother, it's a work.
Yeah, that's – oh, boy. Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I have not gone to see live wrestling maybe since the last time we went to go see live wrestling. I was going to go to Starrcade. A huge part of that is me not wanting to deal with other wrestling fans. The last, like, 5 or 6 shows in a row that I've been to, I have had very bad experiences.
Well, I've usually had fine experiences. I've usually had no problem – one weird thing about this, we had better seats than we've ever had.
Oh, were there chairs?
We had chairs, yeah.
Context for everyone. When Matt and I and Marlene and Aiden went to the Bon Secours Wellness Arena to watch Raw, we did not have seats. We had paid for a place to sit. The physical chairs were not there.
Yeah, they had been removed for some inexplicable reason. But we didn't have that problem because, again, we weren't in the area where there were arena seats. Mm-hmm. We were far enough down that we were in the folding chairs that they set up, you know, closer to the ring, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that may have had something to do with, like, the fans around us being more vocal. So the guy behind us was like Mr. Critic. And once 205 Live started, he went into this whole thing about 205 Live and how it's been ruined since Enzo Amore left. And we were just kind of like,
God,
we got to go.
Yeah, that's a peace out.
There were also two guys sitting right to our right who were like funny. And we mostly agreed with them. You wouldn't have thought that they would be huge fans of the people they were, because they were like super South Carolina, right?
Okay.
They were also very into Andrade Cien Almas.
You did just describe me.
I mean, they're South Carolina in a way that you are not.
Brother, I've seen a lot of wrestling shows in South Carolina. I know who you're talking about.
But they were very into Andrade Cien Almas. They loved Charlotte. They were booing Carmella like crazy. They were cheering for Becky Lynch. Like, one positive, I must say, nobody around us was saying, like, women can't wrestle. So that's an improvement.
Yes.
Over, like, even just a couple years ago, going to wrestling shows. There was always that guy who was like, ugh, bathroom match. Just get this over with.
Yeah.
There wasn't any of that, which is great. In fact, there were cheers when they showed like a little video promo thing for the WWE special about the Women's Royal Rumble.
Oh, cool.
So that was cool. These guys, like, there was one part where like AJ Styles was doing an interview on the screen, and one guy was just like, boo, fuck you, AJ Styles.
Okay, that's surprising.
Fuck you, AJ Styles. You ain't nothing. They were pretty drunk, I think. But, like, they were just loud. Like, they were funny. Like, that cracked me and Marlene up. But, like, they were funny but also loud to the point where we were just kind of like, okay. Okay, I think we're good. But I did have fun at the show. Saw some good matches. There was it was one of those weird, like, pre-pay-per-view shows, because SummerSlam's this weekend. Mm-hmm. Where the main event, quote-unquote main event, of the actual TV show was a promo.
Mm-hmm.
It was AJ Styles and Samoa Joe doing promos at each other. Before that happened, Paige came out and said, our actual main event of the night is a six-man tag between AJ, Gallows, and Anderson, and Samoa Joe, Shinsuke, and Randy Orton, which was cool. But that happened after 205 Live. Also, the advertised six-man tag main event had Daniel Bryan in it.
Okay.
Which kind of disappointed me, I have to say. But even though I'm like, I feel like I'm mostly talking about bad stuff, it was a fun time, and I'm glad I went. And maybe next time if SmackDown's in town, I'll get to see Daniel Bryan. All right, that's my check. Chris, what do you have to recommend?
I'm going to recommend a film, Matt, which unfortunately is probably on its way out of theaters. I saw it Monday morning, and that is Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Matt, my controversial opinion, maybe my most controversial comics opinion, is that the Teen Titans as a concept are bad and they should stop making comics about them.
That's definitely your comics hot take.
Yeah, it's the hottest take I have, and I am not going to defend it, so do not ask. But I make the exception for the Teen Titans cartoon, which I think is delightful in all its forms. Now, Teen Titans Go to the Movies, I think you would love. We almost did it for Movie Fighters because we wanted to kind of contrast it with the DC Superhero Girls stuff that we've been watching.
Yeah, when we thought we were going to go see a movie in Winston-Salem, which just ended up not happening for lots of reasons, Teen Titans Go to the Movies was probably our number one option to do that for
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Since Uncle Drew was not playing, which is what a haunting travesty. Me. How was that not the number one movie in America for 2 months? Anyway, there is certainly a contrast. I genuinely have a lot of difficulty figuring out who Teen Titans Go to the Movies is for. There's, and I will say, our good friend Ben Gulley took his young daughter to see it. And she very much enjoyed it, from what I hear. And I know that, like, we as kids watched plenty of Looney Tunes with, like, Bugs Bunny doing an impression of Liberace or Peter Lorre or things that we didn't get the references to that we still thought were funny because, you know, it's yeah. Bugs pulling a weird face or doing a voice or something.
There are a lot of Bing Crosby jokes in old Looney Tunes.
So many. But Teen Titans Go to the Movies has very specific kinds of humor that I think's hilarious, that I think you would really enjoy, but I cannot imagine a child really loving the extended Challengers of the Unknown bit.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask, is it that DC Comics bullshit?
There is so much DC Comics bullshit in it. Can I tell you the funniest part of the movie, the part that made me laugh, like, till tears were in my eyes?
I would love to hear it.
The Titans are told that there will only be a movie made about them if they are the only superheroes. Like, the only way we would make a movie about you is if there were no other superheroes to make movies about. Because it's a superhero movie about superhero movies, which I think is really interesting. And very well structured in that regard. So in order to become the only superheroes, the Teen Titans decide that they need to go back in time and stop everybody's origin story. So there's a weird, like, Back to the Future music. Like, they literally play Back in Time by Huey Lewis and the News. And they do, like, tricks on the big wheels that had the little drift lever, which is, that shit's from the 80s. They do not make those anymore. Then they go back in time and they stop Krypton from blowing up. They take Wonder Woman's magic lasso away from her when she's a child, and they stop the Waynes from going into Crime Alley. And instead they send them into Happy Alley. Then they come back to the future, back to the present, and supervillains are destroying the world. Like, because, like, Sinestro is blowing everything up and the Joker is dropping bombs on cities. So they have to go back. So they go back in time, they fuck up the Krypton stabilizing keyboard, they give Wonder Woman back her lasso. Then they not only go back and steer the Waynes to Crime Alley, they stop them right before they get in and give Martha her pearls. It is grim. But, like, they're very, like, it's very funny, and I'm a big fan of the Teen Titans Go cartoon. Go see it if you can, or I'm sure it'll be on Cartoon Network and available on streaming before too long. I thought it was a hoot. There's so much, like, really good Dan Hip art. At one point, there is a poster for the movie of Dark Knight's Metal that is drawn by Dan Hip that's very, very good.
I do have a big question of, like, who was the movie intended for? And did anybody at any process of the making of the movie say, is there, like, a built-in audience for this? Even though I'm sure kids are seeing it and liking it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, there's plenty of, like, songs and, like, funny jokes, but, like, all of the references, I feel like, are not only just for an older audience, but specifically, like, a you and me audience who think about Swamp Thing all the time.
And know what metal is.
Yeah.
But, like, I saw something on Twitter. I don't know who it was from or when, but it was right as Teen Titans Go to the Movies was coming out. And it was basically like, Teen Titans Go to the Movies is only for children.
No, that is a bonkers take. I mean, it's silly, but if you've watched the cartoon, you know exactly what you're getting into. It's the cartoon, but for an hour and a half. Oh, also, there's a Super Best Friends Forever short directed by Lauren Faust that's really fun at the beginning, all about Batgirl. Matt, what is your rec this week?
My rec is, I believe it is an actual television show on Comedy Central, but I have been watching it in YouTube form, which I think is an enjoyable way to consume it. It's called This Is Not Happening. And what it is stand-up comedians telling stories about harrowing or stressful or just weird things that have happened to them. And I think a lot of the episodes on Comedy Central are themed, but the way that it's broken up on YouTube is, like, you just get one story. And the stories are anywhere from about, like, 8 minutes to, I think the upper limit is maybe, like, 15 or 16 minutes. Some will tell stories about, like, you know, wild shit that happened to them, about, like, overdosing on drugs or something like that. Others are a little more silly or goofy, like about a time that they got into a fight when they were a kid. And it's this really interesting mix of comics who are doing this, because you get a lot of the kind of, like, younger club comics who you might expect to have that sort of storytelling bent to what they're doing. But there's also shit on there, like, where, like, Louis Anderson and Kathleen Madigan are telling stories that are wild. Like, Louis Anderson tells a couple that are like if Life with Louis was an adult show, like, that's the kind of stories he's telling, where it's like he's not, you know, scrubbing his dad's alcoholism and that kind of stuff. So it's super interesting. I will say your mileage may and will vary on different stories from different comics. There's one comic, and I will not name this person, but there's one comic who told a story where I was just straight up, this is made up and a lie.
Okay.
The whole thing. Like, and I didn't really necessarily have any reason to believe that. It was just the way it was being told and the details or lack thereof in it, and sort of the way that this comic was presenting themselves. Just all the clues pointed to it just being made up. But for the most part, they very much ring true. They don't always paint the person telling them in a positive light. They're just fascinating. There's one about Henry Rollins right after he joined Black Flag and kind of not fitting in and going on this mad LSD trip after he had never taken drugs before. That is nutso. So you could just go on YouTube and search for "This Is Not Happening" and fall down a hole, because it'll just keep recommending you those videos once you watch it one. Like, you'll be on the path to watching all of them.
I cannot imagine anything that would be more stressful for me than watching this.
I mean, you know that they're fine, Chris. They're telling the story.
Are they, though?
They're telling the story on TV.
Matt, I don't know. I got the anxiety. You know that.
You do. So maybe if you got the anxiety, don't do it. But I feel like in some cases, if the story feels like it might be too stressful, just realize that the person telling it is on stage and they're fine. And they're going to get through it. All right, Chris. Those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some of the comics of the week.
I would love to.
Thor number 4, Chris. There's a lot going on in that book.
There is so much going on. Have you been keeping up with Thor since the relaunch happened?
I know I read the first issue. I have dipped in and out. I definitely dipped back in on this one when you recommended it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many threads.
Yeah, there's so much happening. And Marvel's kind of shift to doing 4-issue stories means that things, by and large, are moving faster in those comics, you know? And believe me, I am aware of that, having written a couple of 4-issue minis lately. This whole thing, there is none of the wedding in hell stuff in number one. And now, like, number one is like all about, oh, Thor needs to get a new hammer and he's going to fight the Juggernaut. And that's, you know, only the first 10 pages or so, but still. This one, there is a full-on wedding in hell that is a third wedding that was proposed over the course of this story arc. Spoiler warning for everyone, if you haven't read Thor yet and you want to keep the surprise, skip ahead. Carnilla the Norn Queen marries Hela, and they are now the two queens of hell.
Yeah.
Because Hela was going to marry Baldur, but Carnilla puts the ring on and finishes the wedding to save Baldur from being married to Hela. Also, Thor is briefly the king of hell and gets a magic blood hammer.
And a, like a Hela headdress.
Yeah, because Hela's hat that she wears, that you might remember from comic books or the movie Thor Ragnarok, is the Hell Crown. Also, Surtur's daughter, Cinda, is in it, the Queen of Cinders. This is, Matt, this is that pure Marvel Comics bullshit.
It really is.
I love it. I really want to go back and read, like, all the Jason Aaron. Like, I want to read all the Hickman Marvel stuff, and I want to read all the Jason Aaron Thor stuff, because it is wild.
You didn't even mention that Thor goes to Valhalla.
Uh-huh.
Thor dies, in quotation marks.
Right, so he kills Thor in number 3.
So he can go to Valhalla and bring back Brunhilde Valkyrie to take part in the ongoing war in hell. Mike Del Mundo's art in this is very good, but I did notice something about it.
Okay.
That's weird. And it may be part of simply the story moving faster. Everything feels like it's shot at mid-range. No, it never pulls back.
Mm-hmm.
Every shot is so tight. Like, even establishing shots, like there's a shot of a boat near the end of the issue that is like very tight. And I think I understand what the book's going for. It's trying to or what Del Mundo's going for. He's trying to like make this about characters when it's also these big epic things happening. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's a little hard in a single issue to kind of get a sense of place.
Yeah, I will agree with you on that. I feel like what Mike Del Mundo's going for here, very clearly, I think both he and Aaron are doing a Simonson riff, you know?
Yeah.
And if you go back and look at those Simonson pages, as I do literally every day of my life, they're like 6, 7, 5 panel pages all the time because he's telling multiple storylines. But yeah, like when you get the one splash page in this issue is Thor and Brunhilde and a bunch of Valkyries and a bunch of Einarjar all come, like there's like 20 characters on that page and 4 dialogue balloons. So everything is packed in.
There's no landscape in it.
Yeah.
It's all character.
Yeah.
Which is I that's not even a criticism. It's just something I noticed about the art, you know?
Yeah. There are a lot of like 6 and 7 panel pages in here is what stuck out to me. And I like Mike Del Mundo's art. It's really beautiful, but it has this kind of fairy tale storybook quality to it that I think really works for Thor. But it's very weird to see a Thor book that looks like this at the same time as we're getting a Jason Aaron written Avengers book drawn by Ed McGuinness, who in terms of like the character shapes and the way he draws people, Mike Del Mundo and Ed McGuinness are very close together. But in terms of the finished product and the way it's shaded and colored and the expressions and the coloring that you get from Del Mundo and Marco D'Alfonso in this issue is a world apart.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money when you say it's a storybooky kind of look.
Yeah, which I did.
It's very appropriate for this story in particular, but different. Different from what I'm used to, yeah. I guess is what I'll say.
Even if you read it digitally, it looks like it was drawn on paper, which I think is an interesting quality for a book to have in 2018.
Speaking of books that are interesting to have in 2018, let's talk about Batman number 53.
Okay.
We talked about the first issue of this arc where Batman has, or Bruce Wayne, has essentially finagled his way onto a jury so that he can undo what he believes was a wrong he did as Batman, brutalizing Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
Over what he believed to be Freeze's responsibility for some deaths. And it's a really interesting concept. It's a really interesting premise. I had some issues with his methods, the character's methods, when we talked about that first issue. And I still got him here.
We've talked about this on the show before. I was a little cagey about it for a while, but I mean, we're 53 issues in at this point. I think I can talk about it. My feeling with Tom King on Batman has always been that he likes all the stuff, but he doesn't like Bruce Wayne. He doesn't like Batman himself. And I think that shades a lot of his stories. Like, I think it definitely kind of shades War of Jokes and Riddles, the first couple arcs. I think it definitely shades this one, but I think it does so in a way where this is the – I think this is the best Batman story that King has done on this book. I don't think it's not as fun to read as the Super Friends story, the team up, but like for a pure Batman doing Batman stuff story, this is, I think, the best thing he's written. And I love Bruce Wayne talking to other people in Gotham City about Batman and making the argument that is the opposite of the argument that we always see, right? That Batman has to be this symbol and Batman has to be this perfect symbol that we can all aspire to, but making the argument that Batman is a person and can therefore make mistakes. And so viewing him as that kind of symbol is a flawed way to look at Batman, which I think is really interesting. Cause it's like, it's kind of the opposite of a Scott Snyder Batman or a Grant Morrison Batman who is that person and who always is that person. But it's also like, Tom King specifically refuting a type of argument about Batman. Like Bruce Wayne is literally like, yeah, he's not, you know, all the stuff about being super competent and infallible is not true.
Well, I mean, he's the actual straight up line is he's not God.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the literally comparing Batman to God in both a favorable and unfavorable way is really fascinating. I think it really works.
I was reading this issue and I was wondering if it was verging on being pretentious.
Well, I mean, that's the last 53 issues of Batman.
I felt that in this one in a way that I had not in others. But I think what ultimately happens at the end, which is that Batman goes back to one, for lack of a better way of putting it, where he goes back to wearing his old clothes. He goes back to wearing what he was wearing in year one.
You're talking about going back to his real clothes?
His real clothes.
It's almost his real clothes. It doesn't have the it's not the like apparel Batman costume. Well, it's Batman's real clothes. But boy, it's I love it.
I think it's part of the argument. Cause the Batman who wears those rebirth clothes is God.
Yeah.
He is infallible. He is basically perfect. Or he doesn't make mistakes. This Batman, the year one Batman, is the guy we can accept seeing fucking up.
Yeah, people forget that about year one. Year one's a story where Batman consistently fucks up for four issues.
The lettering on the Bible quote from Job, which also I was like, I did a little bit of an eye roll at.
Oh, yeah.
But the lettering on the Bible quote from Job, that's Batman Year One lettering.
Yeah.
I feel like that is a very distinct reference there.
If we can get Superman in his trunks back, Batman in his trunks back, that's like 90% of my problems with the DC Universe fixed. Put them in their real clothes. You know what clothes they wear.
Yeah, that's their clothes.
Yeah, that's their clothes.
All right, one last book we're going to talk about is Crowded Number One, which is a real good comic book.
When this was announced, I like hit Sabella on Twitter, and I was like, that is the premise everybody wishes they thought of first.
And we should say, Christopher Sabella is the writer of this book. The art is by Rose Stein and Ted Brandt.
And Triana Farrell with colors.
Colors are by Triana Farrell, yeah.
And logo by our boy, Dylan Todd.
Yeah, it's a real good logo. I love how on the letters page, each member of the creative team is identified with a different version of that little skull.
So here's the premise of this comic and why it's so goddamn good. A woman, our main character, is targeted for assassination.
Her name's Charlie.
Charlie is targeted for assassination by a crowdfunded assassination app called Reaper. And you can crowdfund. It's like Kickstarter for murder. And so there's so many people contributing to it that the bounty on her head is over $1 million. And so she goes on another app called Defend and hires a bodyguard. And that's the premise. There's a bodyguard that has to stop this woman from being killed by a crowdfunded assassination campaign. That's fucking brilliant. Especially when it gets into it's the not too distant future stuff where she drives for Mover and Drift and she rents out her apartment for pad hopping and all of the
she walks dogs.
Yeah. And so there's all these names of apps that she is, you know, working in the gig economy, and then it all goes bad for her. It's really – this is maybe my favorite thing Sabella's written, honestly.
I think it's great. I do think there's one big burning question that I am sure will be addressed, but it was on my mind through this whole issue.
Okay.
So through the Defend app – Charlie hires a woman named Vita mm-hmm. to protect her. Vita has not a great reputation on Defend, but she also, all of her clients have lived. So there's this question of why she has this bad rating. My question is, in what world, like, what is up with Vita where she wouldn't just turn around, kill Charlie, and take that huge bounty? Like, wouldn't anybody take that seven-figure bounty on Charlie? Like, it's, I mean, obviously, it's, I think it's going to be something about just like Vita has principles, and when she's hired, she does the job, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would really hope that in future issues, that is directly addressed.
I have a hard time believing that it wouldn't, now that you mention it. I also didn't think that, Matt. So I guess if you ever need help, you can come to me, and you know I won't turn on you. But I know where your mind's at. But no, yeah, I feel like I just, you know, I took everything at its word in this. And you have to kind of think like, oh, right, this is, she's a bodyguard. She's going to help. But I do think now that you mention that, we get bits and pieces of each character's past. And yeah, surely that's going to be in there.
There's also clearly a lot of implication, inference, that, or inference on the reader's part, that there's a lot that these two characters are not saying, that they are probably hiding mm-hmm. from the other, that will be revealed soon. So I like that part of it. There's definitely a part near the end where Charlie kind of reveals a little bit about herself that she's not revealed to Vita yet,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is cool. So I'm expecting this to kind of unfold like a puzzle and for us to find out some stuff that has not been revealed yet. And the whole concept of just like all of this being crowdfunding and gig economy stuff is very, very clever.
Yeah, I think really hits close to home for you and me. We did talk about a lot about the high concept and the writing in this book, but Rose Stein's pencils, Ted Brandt's inks, Trina Farrell's colors. I love the art in this book. I love the character designs. I love the way that Charlie looks, and all the body language in this book is really good. And I'm really hoping for a bodyguard romance between these two, because I think they make a very cute couple in this first issue. So I'm holding out hope for that.
Chris ships it.
I do.
Everybody.
I'm shipping it. Call me UPS.
Speaking of nerd culture
ships,
stuff,
you could have said ships, Matt.
There's ships in space.
There you go.
That's true. I was trying to overcomplicate it, I think. Anyway, let's talk to John Sung.
Joining us for the program this week is someone I am very excited to talk to. You know him. You love him. He's at Ferocious J on Twitter. John Sung is here to talk to us about Tales from 10 Forward. John, buddy, welcome to the show. First time, right?
First time caller, long time listener. In fact, very long time. I think that I may have actually been on board since the very beginning.
All those horrible years ago.
God.
All those in the dark times.
I mean,
I fear to revisit.
It has been nothing but quality since day one.
You know what? That is very sweet of you to say. You know what else is nothing but quality? Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Oh my god!
Actually, that is very untrue. Season two, especially, is garbage.
Ooh, that. That's a bold statement. That's a bold statement.
Well, I stand by it. A, there was a writer's strike going on. B, okay. As I have said many times, I don't fuck with Dr. Pulaski.
Also, you know what? I mean, that's fair. There's a lot of people who don't, and I have to respect them. But just, I mean, I don't know. Season one's got some real clunkers in there.
Yeah, it doesn't get good till season. But you know what? We should explain why we're talking about Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Of course, yes.
John, Tales from 10 Forward.
Yes,
please, please explain it to our listening audience.
I can do it in 5 words. Drunk.
Okay,
history.
I bet. Yep.
Drunk history plus Star Trek.
You have how many episodes exist right now for people to watch?
There are 5 what we like to call retellings They currently span between, we've got four from TNG and we've got one from what I like to call Original Recipe, although we are prepared, if need be, to go into other corners of the Star Trek universe, with, I think, maybe the exception of Animated Series, because we don't have an animated opening.
You don't want to do that one where Spock is bullied by those little Vulcan kids, keep calling him Earther.
Oh no. I think honestly, I feel like I'm just gonna put this out there right now. I feel like Animated Series is out of our budget.
Okay, fair. So you've had multiple guests on. I think which one does Ryan North do?
Oh, he was responsible for the latest one that we did, which was Yesterday's Enterprise.
Which is an extremely good episode of the show.
It really is. It really, yes. I'm not sure if he did it because it is genuinely his favorite, but also maybe because it's the only episode to really prominently feature what I think is both he and my like favorite Enterprise, which is the Enterprise C.
Oh, you love the C.
It's real good. I don't know how else to explain it. It's the circular saucer section. It's the fact that the struts for the warp nacelles come out at right angles. I just think there's just something about that design that is – it just seems classic.
I'm going to be real with you. I like the E. I think the E looks cool as hell, and I know that is an unpopular opinion.
You're not alone. I think I might be talking out of turn. I have this suspicion that I feel like Andy Khoury might agree with you on this.
I feel like we would have similar Enterprise design instincts on that. Because, like, everybody likes the original Enterprise, right?
Yes.
The original series Enterprise, not the NX-01.
Right.
That piece of trash. I like the nacelles of the A, because they're very Art Deco.
They are.
But I feel like the E, like, does a Star Trek The Next Generation version of, like, an Art Deco Enterprise.
Oh.
With the kind of elongated saucer section and the – like, it looks a little bit stretched out in a really cool way. I don't know. I really like the E.
That is an aesthetic concern that I had not actually considered before.
Also, the C has the big body. I like the big body on the C.
Yes. Yes. That also is very good. Yes.
What five episodes of Star Trek have you done?
Okay,
on
so
Tales from Ten Forward.
That is a damn good question. So we started with, I believe we started with The Price, which is the one where there are several civilizations negotiating for rights to the Barzan wormhole. The second episode was The Game, the episode that famously starred Ashley Judd. Where
that's the one where Riker gets so horny that it almost kills everyone.
Yes. To be fair, I don't think that's only happened once.
Riker goes to Risa, the sex planet.
Yes.
Which I love that everybody's like, oh yeah, you know, Star Trek, it's like really, you know, it's the smarter science fiction to explore civilization. There's a sex planet.
It totally is.
Okay, look. The quick sidebar to the sidebar. I have told you that if I ever get to be on this show, I want to do a Starship Mine.
Yes.
Which is Die Hard on the Enterprise.
Yes.
But I will also volunteer to do the episode of Deep Space Nine where Worf and Dax and Bashir and the waitress from Quark's who is dating Bashir all go on a double date to Risa so that Bashir and the waitress can break up. And Worf gets so mad that people are horny that he accidentally joins a terrorist organization. Because that episode is great.
I have only the vaguest memory of that episode at best. Clearly, I need to rewatch it. I mean, I feel like a DS9 rewatch is imminent in my – I mean, I've done it a couple of times, but clearly the last time was not sufficiently – I just – yeah, no, it might be time.
So we got Yesterday's Enterprise. We've got The Game.
Yes. The episode where Google Glass almost takes over the entire Enterprise and they almost lose the ship. What was our third episode? Yes, of course. Our third episode is Darmok.
Of course,
that
a very good episode.
Yes, like it's a friend of mine calls it like the quintessence of Star Trek's mission, which honestly, I feel like he might have a point there.
I am shocked that the door to my office has not been kicked in by my wife storming in to talk about how much she hates Darmok.
It doesn't make any sense if you really think to examine it for a second. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You just kind of have to go with it. I understand everyone's objections to that episode, but I don't care. I don't care.
All right. So what are the last two?
The last two the fourth one is an early original recipe episode, actually, Charlie X, where they basically pick up what kind of amounts to an incel with Q powers.
That is exactly that episode. He's got fucked up eyes.
So that happens, and it's got kind of like Dana, who did the retelling of that, actually points out that it is his super dark ending, because you would have to watch our episode to find out, but it is surprisingly dark for a Star Trek. And then our fifth episode was yesterday's Enterprise, that classic that features the Enterprise C, the best Enterprise, and the return of Denise Crosby as Tasha Yar. Really, just like all around, a near perfect episode.
It's very, very good. I think people can tell. I have jumped right into this. I don't get to talk about Star Trek that often unless I'm sitting at a con next to Chad.
Oh.
In which case, he will just look at me sometimes and go, "Shields up." Which is his very good Riker. But I was an obsessive Next Generation fan circa fourth grade. Like, I have told the story before. I wore a toy communicator on my shirt to school. And I'm not talking about like a pin like they had on the show. The toy, the Playmates toy, was like an inch thick. It weighed down my shirt, if you've ever seen this thing. And it had like red LEDs in it.
Oh my God.
I wore that shit to school. That is how much I loved Next Generation. And I feel like it is the perfect show for a project like this. Because there's 140 episodes, give or take.
Oh yes.
Right? They're all extremely episodic, with like the exception of the season finales.
Totally.
And it's something that I think a lot of us know. Like, Matt, you just watched the Rikers, right?
I mean, I've seen all of the other ones, but when I had a thing where for a while, if I was watching it on Netflix, and I would just watch it if Riker was in the thumbnail.
Which is brilliant, because you're guaranteed a good episode.
Yeah.
That's an amazing idea.
The one where Riker goes undercover to prepare a planet for first contact, and he gets trapped there, and he has to fuck BB New Earth to get out. There's so many good episodes.
Here's the thing about that, which is that it is not clear what actually, like, he could probably have gotten away with just licking her forehead or something and being like, "That's how we do it on my planet," and just like leaving. You know what I mean? Like, we all assume that that's what he did, that they banged. We don't know.
But we've watched a lot of episodes of Rikerism.
So. I mean, look, I'm just saying, if I were to do an episode of this show, I would be doing the episode Second Chances from season 6.
Oh my god. Dual Rikers.
Where there's, yeah, it's got two Rikers. You gotta have two Rikers.
I feel like the episode where Thomas Riker shows up on Deep Space Nine and the big reveal is when he takes his sideburns off to reveal that he just has a goatee because he's Thomas Riker. That's like a Tales of Ten Forward that it was actually an episode.
I don't know. Second Chances is fantastic. I don't know how we would do it. That would be a question for Evie, for our director. She's the one who kind of like who. She's really the one in charge, right? Like, she is the one driving everything forward. She's she supplies what I would like to call our directorial vision. Also, she's the one who has gone to film school, so she actually knows how to do this stuff. I'm what I might like to call a producer.
that kind of brings me back to my question. What is, like, what made you want to do this? Like, what's your history with Next Gen?
I mean, like you, I was there from the start. Like, I mean, I don't remember how old I was. Well, this is math that I can probably do, because I think Next Gen started when? In, like, 87?
It's 87. It is weirdly, it is a show that has a Die Hard episode that started before Die Hard came out.
Wow.
Yeah, it goes 87 to 94.
Okay, so in that case, I must have been, I was 8. I was in from the start, and I don't even remember how I started watching. Like, it's not like my parents were big Star Trek fans or anything. Like, it must have just been on, and something about that just clicked. And I was in from the get-go. I mean, you remember the end of season 3 at the end of Best of Both Worlds? And we had to live an entire summer not knowing what the fuck was going to happen?
Yeah, dude, you might remember that I said 4th grade.
Oh,
so
God.
I was, that would have been the summer I turned 9, which would have been, like, that would have been the time. It would have been season 3, season 4.
That, I mean, that's an eternity.
Yeah. I didn't know, I had a Locutus action figure before I knew that shit was all going to work out okay. I have Riker and his cool jacket, I have Picard and his cool jacket sitting on my desk right now. That's nice. Him making it so.
Nice. With those weird ribbed leather shoulders, that jacket.
I want that jacket so bad. You have no idea. And I know it would look bad on me because I am not Patrick Stewart. So was it just like, I know I used to tape it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I used to tape every episode of Deep Space Nine as it aired. I had tapes of Next Generation. So it was something, like, way before pre-internet times, I would go back and rewatch all the time.
Same. Although, weirdly, the only episodes that I remember having on tape at my house was the two-parter that ended, I want to say, seasons 5 and 6, Time's Arrow, that weird shit where they go back in time and meet Mark Twain.
Yep, like, where they find Data's head.
Yeah, like, I remember having that on tape for some reason. But
the one that I remember having on VHS was Move Along Home from Deep Space Nine, which is the one where most of the cast of Deep Space Nine gets trapped in a board game. And it's like they're LARPing D&D within a, like, on Deep Space Nine, and Quark thinks he's murdered them at one point. It's very, very good.
Was that a season one? I feel like that was...
That is season one as hell, my man.
Oh, God. Season one. I have this theory that, like, no Trek show gets really good until its third season. And that is true for all of them, except, and I'm going to go on record here saying, I feel like of all of them, Enterprise actually has the strongest first season.
So I recently rewatched all of Next Gen again for about the third time. Mm-hmm. Because I fucking love it. I didn't want to watch Deep Space Nine because that's something I was kind of watching off and on with Aiden. Mm. And I didn't want to watch Voyager because that show is not good.
I'll come back to it in a second.
So instead, I started watching Enterprise. And I have been told that by the end of it, like the last couple seasons, Jeremy Parrish of the Retronauts podcast actually described it to me as some of the best Trek that exists. The first season is nearly unwatchable and way too horny.
Oh, yeah, no, the horniness is not a thing. Like, yeah, no, that doesn't enter into it. It definitely is, and that is a mark against. But I feel like if you compare it to the first seasons of the other shows, I don't know, I feel like... something about, like, I watched it, I too watched it not too long ago, actually, and I was like, this is actually pretty good. I mean, as a first season of a Trek show. Your buddy is right, though. By the time they get to seasons 3 and 4, Enterprise gets awesome.
Well, the thing that I think puts TNG above everything, and this is honestly not like a slight against any of their shows, because, you know, I like the original series just fine. I think Deep Space Nine is a hoot and a half. The cast of Next Generation saves that show until, like, that show is bad for two seasons. Like, from a writing standpoint, from a production standpoint, it looks decent. But what saves it is the cast is amazing and they click immediately. Like, Patrick Stewart is so good. Frakes is so good. Bev, oh, she's the best. Love Bev.
I mean, yeah, that is, I think, indisputable. No, absolutely.
I want to get on this point because talking about the horniness of not just Enterprise, but all Star Trek. Like, from minute one, episode one, Star Trek is horny on main.
That's true.
That's, it's horny on bridge. But one thing that Star Trek is not is drunk. Because they came up with alcohol that doesn't get you drunk.
That's true.
I would love to know how Tales from 10 Forward contends with that. The show that's like, oh yeah, yeah, we have a bar, we drink alcohol, but you don't get drunk from it.
Technically speaking, synthahol does get you drunk. It's just that if you have like a dozen shots and you are wasted and you decide you don't want to be anymore, you can just decide it and it goes away. I don't remember where this is covered. I think it might be in the books somewhere, but it's covered. Yeah, I think it is covered in the books. The Ferengi were the ones who invented synthahol because it gave them an edge over everybody else in business negotiations. Like they could be drinking somebody under the table, and when they were good and ready, they would just make all the deals they wanted because they were sober on their end. But then apparently word got out. And everybody got mad at them, but then the Ferengi realized that they could just make more money actually just straight selling synthahol. So it didn't matter.
But we can agree that synthahol is one of the weirdest Star Trek ideas, right?
They might as well call it future booze.
Like food is just like, oh yeah, we got these machines that make food. Yeah. You just ask for food and the machine makes it. But synthahol is like this weird, like, oh yeah, yeah, they could drink alcohol, but nobody's gonna get hurt, you know. there's no danger involved. It's very like almost like pearl clutchy synthahol to me.
I mean, that honestly might just be down to standards and practices on, you know, TV. Like that might have just been a production imposing thing.
But that's weird too, because they didn't have to put a bar on the ship. They all like Guinan's great, Whoopi Goldberg's great on the show. I love that she is on it. I think she is a fantastic character and a fantastic actress. They did already have someone in the cast whose job it was to talk to you. She's on the bridge.
That is true. That is 100% true. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I'm trying to think back to like all of the instances where they're at 10 forward. No, you're right. Yeah, I was going to say like it's not clear that everybody's drinking booze all the time, but they pretty much are. And except anytime Wesley is there, but other than that, everybody's always clutching an ale of some sort. I feel like
gotta get that Romulan ale.
God, if only.
Which? How do you get that? They're at war.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a banned substance. You can't replicate it. You have to smuggle it. Or if you are me, you take 4 ounces of blue pixie sticks and dissolve it into vodka.
That is like a drink I would have had at a con when I was 26. Well, let's talk about the campaign.
Yes.
You're doing a GoFundMe to fund the next little bit of episodes. It's GoFundMe.com/moretalesfrom10forward with hyphens between those words. We'll put a link to that on warrecordagex.com so you don't have to remember it. You are asking for $1,950, and I have a question for you.
Yes.
How did you not make it 1701? Like, because it's not that far off. I know, I'm sure you budgeted out what an episode costs, but John, how did you not make it 1701?
I am ashamed to admit that that did not occur to me.
It's the first thing I thought of when I looked at this page.
God, I am a failure as a Trek fan. God. Oh, that would have been perfect. Yeah, no, I don't know what to tell you. That should have been what happened. And now there's no way to correct it.
I'm disappointed. I can only hope that you reach, like, 17,010. That's my hope for you, to correct this oversight. So that 1950 is going to fund three more episodes.
Yes. Yes.
Do you have picked out what you're going to do for those?
We have recorded a drunken retelling from a friend of mine that we are now in the process of editing, because as of this recording, we have actually hit the halfway mark, which is lovely. So we definitely know we've at least got enough to make one episode. So we're doing that. But beyond that, we basically, like, we have a list of people who've said they want to do an episode and which one they want to do, but we have yet to actually go and film those retellings, because it's actually kind of a production. In order to film one of these retellings, I have to watch, or there needs to be, there's three people, basically. There's camera, sound, and an interviewer. And the interviewer has to have watched the episode in question and taken notes so that they can be sure to prompt our drunken reteller, because they are going to need prompting, and be sure that they catch everything that they want to. And that takes some doing. So that's we haven't done any more any prep work on any other retellings, but we probably should. We probably should.
Can you tell us what episode you filmed already?
I can only tell you that it comes from a corner of the Star Trek universe that we have not yet covered in our little project.
Interesting. Interesting. Does it involve a weird people rubbing each other down in the decontamination chamber scene?
I can say nothing that will give any further hints.
Okay, so these are fan films.
Yes.
They're you release them on YouTube, so people can go watch these now. It is very obviously a labor of love.
Yes.
From you guys.
Yes.
What is the, like, what's the process like of doing this, of getting people together, and how do you approach people to be like, hey, do you want to be on my internet show where someone recaps an episode of Star Trek and then we act it out?
We are fortunate to have for some reason access to just a bunch of friends who are already nerds and are already on board with the idea. So we've been very fortunate in that aspect. Let me walk you through it. So, like, once we've recorded the retelling, then it has to be edited, and that honestly is the part that takes the most work on the part of one person, who is Evie, our director, because it's like she has to basically boil a drunken monologue of however long down to somewhere between 11 and 15 minutes, you guys are aware, editing is rough work, but I feel like it must be at least two or three times as hard when the source material you're working with is from a person who is wasted. So there's that, right? Once we've got the edit down, then I get the edit and I transcribe it and then kind of like make a script out of it so that we can break it into scenes, and we kind of know, where everything is supposed to be. We can get a list of necessary cast members. Evie has an entire crew of like volunteers ready to go for the like production aspects. Grips and camera people and a first AD who can actually tell us where we need to be for a thing. We do more or less all of the filming in an office building, which actually is just where Evie's dad works, and we have access to it like after hours, basically. If you've ever wondered,
Oh, I have. Don't you worry.
Yes. So that's where and why we do all of our filming there, because nobody bothers us.
The next question I have is really it's a technical question.
Certainly.
I guess part one, do you pay for the drinks?
No. Actually,
no.
No, I mean, we do the retelling. We film the retellings at the retailer's house. Because, with the exception of episode of our fifth retelling, which we did at San Diego Comic-Con, which is a whole other story. But, yeah, usually we do it at the person's house, because that way when they are toasted, they can just hang out in their house and quietly recover. It took Harley
– I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it took Harley a couple of days, actually, who did our Darmok episode. It took him, I think, about 24, if not 48 hours to get right after his retelling. So, yes. But yeah, usually people already have booze in their house, so we don't have to worry about it.
Well, that my next question was going to be like, do you have to do a GoFundMe because you had to get Ryan North drunk and he's like 8 feet tall?
God. Oh, God.
like what Andre the Giant amount of liquor did it take?
Here's the thing about it is that he doesn't drink all that often, so it didn't actually take that much. And I for the record, I still feel kind of bad about it because I am nearly positive that because he is Ryan North and because he is a good and polite person and Canadian, when our filming was done, we packed up all of the equipment. I mean, he was. He was like on the edge. And when we, like, you know, he got up to see us off and closed the door, I think immediately went to the bathroom to just begin the purging process.
Oh, buddy. That's not how I want that episode to end. It's so good and fun.
I immediately the hotel we were in happened to be fairly close to a 7-Eleven, so I went and I got a couple of Gatorades. I immediately went up and I just left them outside his room with a note, and I was like, "I'm so sorry." And the next day he was, I saw him on the con floor. He was fine, but like I still feel kind of bad about it. He was amazing.
Maybe that's what everybody's drinking in 10 Forward is it's all Gatorade. It's all everybody getting their electrolytes back before it's time to go to Ops and the con.
That
and the helmet.
I love it. I mean, why not? It's as good a theory as any other I've heard.
All right. I think my last question about the production side of things, how do you decide who plays who? Because you've been Picard.
Yes.
Which, like, Picard and Riker, I assume, are, like, the clutch roles.
It varies, honestly, from episode to episode, you know? Like, who's going to be... I mean, I'm not really sure how we... I mean, Evie and I are pals. We've been pals for a long time. And I think she just... I'm not sure if this was part of her vision from the beginning to just, like, put me in a shitty bald cap and just be like, you're Picard, it's okay. Just go. But for all the rest of the roles, honestly, like especially with the last episode, we decided to do a casting call. Like we just emailed a bunch of friends of ours and were like, if you want to be in this next episode we're doing, like here is, you know, a set of MP3s with lines and like, you know, learn them and show up to this, you know, the auditions, as it were, that we held at Evie's dad's office. And yeah, that was how we casted, because there comes a point at which like there are so many people who want to be in that we honestly kind of need to just like make sure that we've got the right person for the right role. So yeah, no, it's now a process, and like for this next one, we're definitely going to have to cast a net, I think. We'll just see what happens.
All right, well if the opportunity comes up to get one of those jackets with the leather straps and that crushed velvet.
God, it is so good, and I still don't know why it was done.
Well, I think it is time for us to turn this over to our listeners on Twitter to see what questions they have for you. Matt, if people want to get in on the conversations that we have that aren't usually this much about Star Trek The Next Generation, but could be, I'm down any moment of any day. How can they go about that?
Well, Chris, it's pretty easy. All they have to do is step on the transporter and just, you know, get ready to head down
head down to the planet. Oh, no. Oh, no. A terrible accident has created two of you. And the other one went back to the ship. And you're stuck on this planet. They don't even know you're here. They don't know that there are two of you. What are you going to do? And what? God damn it, wouldn't you know it? The other you took your Twitter account. What a... Ah! That... Rapscallion took your Twitter account. So you got to start a new one. You got to go to twitter.com, set up an account. And you got to follow the ISB, that's Chris. The Matt D. Wilson, that's me. And you got all the time in the universe, in the galaxy, because you're stuck on this planet, so you can wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 6:30 Pacific, until one of us puts the call out for questions for our guest, and you can ask questions just like these that you're about to hear for John. This one, we'll start with this one from Tales to Enrage on Twitter, who wants to know how many Deep Space Nine characters will show up in 10 Forward, even though this is about the Next Generation.
I mean, we called it Tales from 10 Forward because we couldn't put Star Trek in the title. The project used to be called Drunken Star Trek, but that would have landed us in some trouble. So we changed the name. We'll say that, I think that we are open to doing retellings literally from any Trek series. I have a plan, honestly, for doing – if anybody ever decides they want to do an Enterprise episode, I already have a plan for how we're going to do Enterprise uniforms in the recreation part of the episodes, but I will keep that design to myself for now.
A little bit of mystery for everybody. Here's one from Brian Boone period BRNBNE on Twitter. Brian says, the only episode of The Next Generation I saw as a kid was when some characters turned into salamanders and freaked. How unfair is that? That ruined Star Trek for me for years. It's not really a question. So less a question than an observation, I think, there.
I mean, not that I want to be that guy, but I think that he might actually be thinking of a Voyager episode.
Oh, you don't think he's thinking of the one where people devolve?
Oh,
where Troy turns into a fish?
Yes. Oh, that's true. That is true. However, I will counter by saying there literally is an episode of Voyager where Paris and Janeway turn into salamanders and have babies.
Okay, then, yeah, maybe so. See what I mean when I say Voyager's not good? That is what I mean.
What I'm going to say is that I feel like Voyager is the fun one.
That's the wrongest thing anyone's ever said.
TNG is the classic. Deep Space Nine is the long war story, and Voyager is the fun one.
Deep Space Nine's the fun one? I mean, it's not always fun. There's that episode where you find out Odo's a war criminal. That one's kind of a bummer.
Is there an episode of Deep Space Nine where a crew of interstellar con men have been running around impersonating Federation officers? I will say that there is not, but there is a Voyager, and it is a classic.
And I will also say there is not a Deep Space Nine that involves Dwayne The Rock Johnson as a space wrestler.
Yes!
Because that happens on Voyager. Yes.
Here's what I would say about Voyager. They should have just let Voyager be the fun one without giving it the high concept of them being lost, because it dropped that concept so fast, but they were also still trying to get back through so much of that. Where they just could have done weird shit. It could have just been a show where they did weird shit, and it wouldn't have to be about, like, we got to have a chef.
Fucking, what's that dude, Neelix? I fucking hate Neelix. Him. I hate him.
Fair. That is fair.
Okay, here's one from Barely Sushi on Twitter, Mike Donahue, who asks, which cast member, which member of the Enterprise crew, or perhaps the Deep Space Nine crew or the Voyager crew, would benefit from growing a beard like Riker did?
Whoa. Well, there is, I forget which one it is. There is, God, there's an episode of TNG where at the beginning of it, Data has already grown a beard. I don't remember which. It's like, it's in the, I feel like it's in the cold open of one of the episodes. And I don't remember which one it is. He should have kept it.
There's also an episode where I think it's Data dunking on Geordi when Geordi is like in the process of growing a beard. He's like, Geordi, why do you look so terrible?
I do think that happened, and I don't remember when that was either.
Honestly, I think Odo with a beard would have been the real.
Whoa.
Bearded Odo. Yeah.
Whoa.
Beardo.
Here's a question from Lokified on Twitter, Lucas Brown. If you were in a starship mine scenario, what item, like Picard's saddle, would you have gone back to your quarters for and ended up having to fight terrorists over?
That's a very good question. It would be too meta to say my box set of TNG DVDs. Probably. You know, I'm going to go with my violin.
Man, that makes you a Star Trek The Next Generation character through and through.
Yeah, that's Data style right there.
I'll own it. Wait, what about you two?
I'm looking around my office right now. I have this little wooden Santa Claus. That's very good. I also have little Captain Picard on my desk. I think I'd have to go back and get a little Captain Picard. Because he's doing his make it so fingers, and you can put an eye out with those. Matt, how about you? What do you got?
Proving that I'm also a Next Generation character, I'd go back and save my cat.
Oh, I feel like we can assume that our various family members would be able to save themselves.
A cat? But do you honestly think that Spot, Data's cat Spot, would make it? I don't know. Okay, if it's got to be an inanimate object, I think I would probably save like some Copernicus Jones art or something. I like that art. Here's a question from Mike_Donacci on Twitter. He asks, what's your favorite Starfleet uniform? Any rank, any period, any universe?
Oh, easy. The DS9 Voyager one with the, you know, where the color is on the shoulders, the rest of it is black, and they've got that little turtleneck thing. I think that is, without question, the most aesthetically pleasing Starfleet uniform that exists.
Chris, do you have a choice of best Starfleet uniform?
I would tend to agree with that one. I like the next gen uniforms a lot. Like from, what is it? Is it season 3 on when they get like the good uniforms that aren't giving them back problems?
Yes.
I like those. I actually do genuinely like the Enterprise uniforms because they
pockets.
Yeah, they look like they're space explorers who are also in like a military organization, and they did a really good job of reverse engineering the way that Next Generation uniforms look versus like actual 20th century, or I guess 21st century military uniforms look. I thought that was a really good, it's my favorite thing about that show is the uniforms.
Can I tell you,
yeah.
I hate the Enterprise uniforms.
Do you really?
And I also hate the Discovery uniforms.
Wow. Okay.
Here's why. Because it's not a actual military ship. It's a fucking TV show.
I mean, you do have me there.
And making the color just a little bit of piping is annoying. Like, have people wear different colors.
You know what? That's why I don't like the uniforms that they adopted towards the end of DS9 and for all the TNG movies with the sort of like quilted gray shoulders.
Yeah,
I think that is some bullshit.
I like them doing the department colors as the turtlenecks. I thought that was pretty cool. But I see what you're getting at. I think visually, the Next Generation uniforms make the most sense for a TV show.
I'm going to say straight up my favorite Starfleet uniform, even though I don't think it's even I don't know the backstory behind it, really. I'm sure there is one. But, like, Kirk's weird green shirt that is so out of, like, it's not like the other uniforms. It's got, like, weird gold filigree on it. Like, that shit's rad. He's like, I'm just going to look like a space king.
Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea why that is the thing either.
I mean, if we're getting specific, again, casual Picard, which Patrick Stewart asked for because he wanted to look different from everybody else. He was like, give me something that looks dope as shit that no one else in the cast has. That's the that's the stuff right there.
Yeah, Picard's jacket is probably my number two.
It's got that little sweater on underneath it. Oh,
it's like the first two Star Trek shows just have some shit where it's like the captain can wear whatever the fuck they want.
Yep,
and why not?
Here's one from A. Steve G. on Twitter, Stephen G. He has a question that's basically, it's a little philosophical maybe. Is the cast of The Next Generation a bunch of space hipsters? They're always going on dang Sherlock slash Shakespeare adventures and stuff.
That's a very good question. I honestly think if you're going to nail any cast for being space hipsters, I think it's got to be DS9 because they're the ones who adopted Klingon coffee as a thing.
Yeah. They're always hanging out at their version of the Central Perk. Here's a question from, I guess we're going to do Character Corner now. This is the part where fictional characters ask questions of our guests. This one's from JJJ Bugle News, J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh, of course.
Which Next Generation character should play my son Johnny Boy in a reboot? The other way around. Which Next Generation character should my son Johnny Boy play in a reboot? So, John Jameson as a Next Generation character.
Can you refresh me? Is this the same hero astronaut who is also sometimes a werewolf?
That's him.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Worf, but only when he's in werewolf mode.
Okay.
You want him to be a werewolf.
Werewolf. We were both getting there, Chris.
Yeah, it was a race.
Oh. All right. I mean, that's asked and answered. We're good on that. Here's a question from Thomas Aquinas at Marvel Summa on Twitter. Can it be said that the Traveler accelerated the Enterprise to warp 10, given that it is defined as the speed at which one occupies every point in space, given that, as Aristotle says in the physics, two objects cannot occupy the same space, and given that the universe did not explode?
Maybe.
This one's from Stone Cold HCC, an account that exists only to ask questions on War Rocket Ajax.
I'll be honest with you guys, this is the only reason I agreed to do this interview.
Still Called HCC asks, what's the craziest thing you ever saw painted on a cornhole?
Stone Cold, here's the problem, is that I don't generally tend to encounter cornhole all that often out here in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I actually don't have a very good answer for you. I'm sorry. It was probably sports team themed, but I don't remember what team or even the sport. And I am sorry about that.
Let's recover from that and ask this question.
With a fish body, by the way, for me.
Was that at the sushi / burger restaurant in Charlotte?
It was at the sushi / burger restaurant in Raleigh, which is the same restaurant.
Okay. This is from Chris's on Infinite Earths. Character Corner is over, by the way. This is from at Chris's Pod on Twitter. Who gets dunked on more deservedly, Worf or Geordi?
Ooh, I think it will depend on for what reason. Geordi is terrible with women. Worf gets shut down more often, but he actually has good ideas. So I think it depends on who you're talking about for which thing.
Has Worf ever made a suggestion on the bridge that Riker did not immediately shut down?
I don't know.
Belay that.
Also, did Worf ever make himself a girlfriend on the holodeck based on a real lady?
What do I have to give you? How much do I have to give you to get definitely a woman to recap the Dr. Brahms saga where she is presented as the villain in that second episode?
Here's what I have to say about that episode, which I did just rewatch. That is not entirely Geordi's fault. He asked the computer to make a recreation of Leah Brahms, and that recreation put the moves on him.
Okay, that frustrates me. That frustrated me so much last time I did the rewatch, because the interesting third part of that story that we never get is the Enterprise is in love with Geordi.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the computer putting moves on Geordi.
Because of course she is. Because he's the chief engineer. Like, that's it's very frustrating that we never get that third part of the trilogy.
That is true. That's true. It never even comes up in the seventh season when an emergent intelligence like builds itself out of the Enterprise's circuitry and then becomes its own independent life form. Which is the thing that happens.
It should be in love with Geordi. Hands, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Agreed. All right, John, that's going to do it for Twitter questions. Before we let you go here on War Rocket Ajax, please tell our listeners where they can find you. We're going to put a link to the GoFundMe in the show notes, but where can people find you if you wish to be found elsewhere online?
This is actually super easy. If you just go to flavor.country, it will redirect to a Tumblr page that I made that just lists all the stuff that I do. I've got a Twitter, I've got Instagram, I've got a newsletter that I send every week, basically, when episodes of my podcast go out, which I have a podcast that I call Idea Factory Giveaway. Actually, let me ask you two a question. When you have an idea, what do you do with it?
I immediately make a podcast about it in an attempt to monetize it.
That's fair. Matt, what about you?
I usually give it away for free on Twitter.
What I've been doing for literally the last decade is just writing them down, like every one of them, without editing. I just put them in basically in a giant spreadsheet. And I've accumulated almost 800 of them, and I've not done anything with most of them. So what I do is I sit a friend down in front of the spreadsheet, and they just get to look through it and be like, what the fuck is that? And we talk it through, and if it turns out to be something that somebody out there wants to do, they should do it. I just want credit, maybe a cut. You can find it basically anywhere podcasts happen just by searching Idea Factory Giveaway.
Well, our guest has been John Song. John, please come back at some point so that we can talk about that time that Bev fucked a ghost. God.
I would be thrilled to anytime.
Thanks once again to John Song for joining us and talking to us about Star Trek The Next Generation. We so rarely get to talk about Riker and how great he is. But we did too much show, everybody. Too much show. So I think we're going to go ahead and end it here. Matt, where can everybody find us online?
The first thing people can do is if they want to send us an email with an Every Story Ever list, a panel president list, a listener question, or if they want to sponsor the show, they can do that by emailing us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can also get in touch with us with listener questions or otherwise at our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. You can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments there. You can also find the panel president and Every Story Ever lists there. Also, you can check us out on any podcast app that's not Spotify. I'm working on that, but I don't know how easy it is. In any case, whatever podcast app you do use that's not Spotify, you can leave us a review there and help us out if you're so inclined. That would be cool for you to do on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you do that. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us individually online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net and you can find links to all my stuff, my books, my social media presences, my other podcasts, and my comics. Everything Will Be Okay #4 is out this week. on Comixology. That's right. This Wednesday, it will be out there. So go grab that up if you liked the first three issues. All four issues will be available there on Comixology this Wednesday, with issue 5 to come soon, probably in September. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find my stuff by going to THE-ISB, as in bestfriends.com. And that'll have links to all the comics that I write, all the columns that I write, all the podcasts that I do. It'll have links to my Tumblr, which I'm on every now and then, and Twitter, which I'm on significantly less. It's a bad website. We should all leave it, but we are trapped in this hell together. We should, though. Take it off your phone, for reals. Just pop it right off there. You don't need it. It's just putting bad ideas in your face all day. Anyway, you can find mine there. Follow me. Hashtag team follow back. No, I'm definitely not. Tell your local store that you would like to pre-order Infinity Wars Sleepwalker and the Army of Darkness Halloween Special 2018, because it is almost Halloween, and that is coming. Matt, that does it. This has been War Rocket at Ajax number 415. How'd we do?
I'm looking at my heart, Chris.
Yeah?
And my heart says HQC.
You should get that checked out.
It could be a heart murmur. You're right.
That actually stands for heart quality critical. Have a great week, everybody. We love you.
Yeah!